free, young hearts run free, young hearts run free, young hearts run free, young hearts run free!
Big welcome back to the Young Hearts Run Free podcast. You join us for season 10, episode 12 already. We've got and I think you'll agree, another belter of an episode and guest coming up for your listening pleasure. John, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good, Stephen. Although I'm a wee bit, what's the word? I've been a wee bit nervous this week because there's a double dunt Young Hearts Run Free helping for folk, isn't there?
There's bonus content to be had if you know where to look for that said bonus content. John and I, in a first, we love a first round these parts, as you know, were cordially invited on to another podcast as guests. They went through our agent, we weighed up the offer, and we thought, that sounds quite good fun. And in we plunged.
We definitely did. We were very grateful to get an invitation from the Greenock Glen Park Harriers pod, otherwise known as the GGH. That's what their pals call them. Kev Craig, Cheryl Thomas, and Rich the producer. I can't even mind Rich's last name because he was sitting in the corner, quiet man. That's when we fund the other podcasts, hey, producers. What's all that about?
What is all that about, by the way? That was an eye-opener. Boy sitting there like on, you know, a deck. And I've actually listened to the first opening gambits of said podcast, which is now available, and there's sound effects and stuff.
That's right, aye. So Rich has done a great job with it. Lovely guy as well. You came in pre and post recording with a good chat with them all, but thank you very much. And I've not listened to it yet, but I definitely will. I will have an hour in my lugs over the weekend. But thank you massively to the Greenock Glen Park folk for having us along. And we would encourage all of our listeners to go. This is your behind the scenes story, isn't it, that we speak about? So it's worth a listen, definitely.
It is. It's a nice collaboration, and we really enjoyed it, and we were thrilled to be asked on as guests. And if you search up GGH pod on Spotify, Apple, etc., you will arrive at that. And they're relatively new at it. I think we were their 12th episode, but I guess they've been learning for the masters, but they're no bad.
They're very good at it. What a good chat. What a good chat. What a good laughter, which is all two of my favourite things, chat and laughter. So get tore in and enjoy it. Best of luck to them.
Things were happening last weekend. Manchester Marathon was weekend round the streets of said city, and there was a few Young Hearts Run Free representatives toeing the line, as they say.
Yeah, and the buffs were being worn with aplomb. Thank you very much to everybody that tagged us in their Michaels, their Flatleys, and also in their post that they put up on social media of them actually on the course. Smiling, gurning, pushing themselves to achieve their dreams.
Is it okay to give a few of them an individual shout out? Do you mind that?
100%.
I know we sometimes don't like that and we go for a wee broad brush in case we miss any route or upset anybody. But
we'll do that first though. If we miss you in this next wee foray, we apologise. We love you very much.
We do. We are.
Get in touch with us.
Get in touch with us. You can come on a guest if we miss you. That's our crawling stance. But Martin James, long time fan and listener of podcast, and I know Martin did the Manchester Marathon last year and it didn't quite go to plan for him. Well, polar opposite end of the scale this year, he's executed the race plan to an absolute T. So impressive. Well done, Martin, getting your sub 3. And it gave me a chance to put Young Hearts sub 3 on an Instagram story. And that's all. That is good.
And since we're talking about behind the scenes, Martin James, Stephen has been waxing lyrical to me about your splits. Great effort. Great day. Well done, man. Fantastic.
Another PB in the bag was Gazitude, Ronnie McRunface, your pal Barrow, who again was out chasing a personal best and got that, yeah, fair wee buffer as well. And he looked like he had an amazing day. So magic for the boy. And I know if Aston Villa get Champions League football this year and he gets a PB in April at Manchester, then 2024 could eclipse anything.
Could be the best year of his life, man. And I tell you as well, I know that Ronnie McRunface, he's had the lurgy for a good wee while now. So even coming back after that and going out and smashing that, man, fantastic. Looking forward to see him in the lakes in the summer. He's going there and all.
Can't wait, yeah. And also, shout out Kev McDowell, another long-time listener. I'm pretty sure he nailed a PB as well. So well done, Kev.
Fantastic.
Awesome well stuff. Done. And then, whoosh, over to Boston, where folk were chasing unicorns.
Aye, I noticed over in Boston, the first thing that Boston arrived in my radar, Bunty was flying over there herself, meeting her pals over there. So she's bathing in the cosmos in the lounge. But I'm making that bit up, so I'll probably cut that bit out. But aye, Bunty was over and she did, you could see, well, you've been to Boston, you know the experience folk have. There's the 5K thing before it, and then there's all these sort of fun run things that happen, and everybody's got the gear on and just awesome.
It's a special, special place to be on marathon weekend for lots and lots of reasons, you know, lots of reasons. And it really brought the memories flooding back for 2 years since I managed over to Boston. And it was, yeah, an absolute treat. And to see everybody else enjoying that same experience, I know it's a difficult one to get into. And I know, you know, that good for age stuff's out of reach for people. There is other ways to get in through charities and such like. It's even worth a trip over to Jack actually running it just to be in about it.
It's one of these iconic ones. It was also Bunty's fourth star out of six, so she's two left to go. And see on the Bunty thing and the Lakeland thing and the call sign thing, if there was ever going to be a one-word call sign for somebody, it's Bunty, isn't it? So it's been in my head since this call sign thing went out.
Okay.
Who do you? It's like Messi and Ronaldo and Socrates, Bunty.
It's up there anyway, isn't it?
Aye, and Adele. Here we go. Let's move on.
Symbol, Prince. Okay, well done, Bunty. The fling awaits next, and then. Actually, Tara Gale got in touch with me to say that she'd listened to the Boston episode that we put out, and she was right into it, and she's gotten right into the podcast recently, and she was mentioning it to say she was going to Boston, and she's also had an awesome experience by the looks of it. So well done, Tara. And Mark Young from Cumbernauld, on the run, Cumbernauld, where they're getting his eighth major marathon medal. He's done the six already, and I don't know if he's won the lottery or what, but get on you, Mark. And it looked like a tough day out for you, but it's the tough days out that make us what we are. So well done, everybody.
And if you're, as we said at the start, if you're knowing that list, well done. If you've been doing there and you finished a marathon in last weekend, fantastic, well done. Let us know and we'll give you kudos.
Definitely. Zipping forward to this weekend, John. Landon Collin in a faraway
town.
That's it.
Well, let me turn this round to you, because it's only right that I ask you a couple of questions about good old Landon Tan.
Okay.
First one is, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling all right. I'm not feeling at any near peak or anything like that, but I'm feeling all right.
Mm-hmm.
The aches and pains are dulled, and I've been managing them reasonably well, I'd say. I've been on that turbo trainer thing, you know, instead of running. I fucking hate it. I know what even if I'm watching something good on Netflix whilst I'm on it, because the easy thing to do on the turbo trainer I found is just to coast and no work hard, and you're thinking to yourself, you know, you come off after 45 minutes or whatever, and you, you know, your heart rate's hardly been up, so you hate to kind of kid yourself on, so you need to be grafting on it for it to be
effective. Yeah,
you need a puddle of sweat and the flare around you, don't you?
That's what I've imagined is happening. I imagine your taps off, sitting there in your knacks, giving it belting and sweat dripping off your toes, man. That's what I'm expecting to happen.
What a picture. It is pretty much that too. If you could have a live webcam of me in there, it would probably be only fans quality.
Right, moving on from that.
So, I'm all right. I'm like, aye.
But let's put context to this London Marathon experience you're having. Mm-hmm. It's come at you late, hasn't it? You've not been. It's not like you've been planning this since like even last year and put in a full training block focused on London.
No.
This is an opportunity landed at your feet, and you're going to rattle it in the back post, aren't you?
It is a bit of a late run at the back post, like Murray Davison used to do for St Johnston, where we heeder or, you know, grafting away at the back post to get the wee tap in or whatever. So,
yeah.
Aye, so late work has been required, a few wee blips just with the Achilles flaring up. But it's an opportunity you can really say no to, you know.
Of course. There's people would give their, what do they get, their high teeth? What is their high teeth?
Your eye teeth. That's just your these two gnashers here. I'm showing John my eye teeth. The roots go all the way up to your eyes. Again, your roots are those.
There you go. So
people, your high teeth. Your high teeth.
I was thinking about a high tea.
So
people would give their eye teeth to get a place in London Marathon, so you're not going to turn that down. If you're fit and able, and you are fit and able, you'll go down there and get your 26 miles done. So,
aye, and the sense of occasion at London is something to behold, and I'm really excited about actually just going down and no having a massive time pressure to, you know, shoot for the stars. Just, you know, I'm not saying that I'm going down and just wander around aimlessly. You know, I'll run with purpose, but it will not be with intent as well, if you know what I mean. So,
a different experience, but a rewarding and wonderful experience all the same. It's the London Marathon, man. It's a major. It's one of the best atmospheres I've certainly ever experienced. And to run through the streets, what's the weather like? Have you had a weather watch?
Been watching the weather for the last 21 days, at least every hour on the hour. It was actually at the start of this week, it was looking a bit warmer. It was looking like 17, 18, pretty light winds. But within the last sort of 24 hours, we're recording on Thursday, the forecast for Sunday's changed and it's a bit cooler. So 11, 12 degrees. And we have a wee northerly wind, which, if you know the London course, isn't a bad wind direction. It'll keep us chilled. Couldn't really complain at current weather forecast. So, no headwinds to get into my head.
What I like about this as well is that there'll be people listening to this podcast as they're running around that London course. I love that. You know, there'll be some listeners who are doing, and best of luck to every single person that we know and knows us that's running the London Marathon this weekend. Hope you go out and have a great day. And if you're on the course right now, and if you're listening right now, smile, because we're right there with you, man. The big love vibes are coming.
You say yeehaw.
Yeehaw.
And no too late to sponsor for my charity that I'm running for, Rupri Spinal Trust. There's been a spate of sponsors in the last 7 days or so, and I want to extend my thanks already for everybody who's taken the time and throwing a few quid into my kitty for the Rupri Spinal Trust. I know that they'll appreciate every penny as well. So no too late. it would be. It would give me extra motivation doing the mile.
Definitely. And remember, every sponsor to Stevie Boy goes on the big circle of life, and you could win a t-shirt that prizes that money can't buy.
And about it, there's big, big chances there. So that would be great. Last thing on London, Jasmine Paris is starting it.
Yeah, we should say she's going to blow a horn on my horn, as they say in Ochterarder. Jasmine Paris is going to be the official starter, or one of the official starters of the London Marathon, and quite rightly so. I love the fact we spoke about how what Jasmine has done this year has went from just running news to mainstream news, and to get the invite to go and start the London Marathon. I mean, that's up there with some
it's a very, very
special people, isn't it? So
it's a fair coup for the London Marathon. One. Yeah, we actually speak about it with this week's guest.
We do.
So
we do.
We'll leave it for that. But I'll give you Jasmine a high five on the way past. Maybe she'll hear a conch to start it. That would be the thing, eh?
Oh, man, that would be brilliant. So I would love that.
Yeah. So, no, can't wait. And I'm sure you'll hear all about it next week as to how it all played out. So if you see me there, give me a shout and say hiya. If I see you, I'll do the same.
And I'm just going to use this opportunity as well with my mouth, to say I wish you the very best of luck. Hope you have an awesome day. I'll certainly send you a message before it. And I'm going to use this time right now. If you know anybody that's running the London Marathon this weekend, and let's burst Stevie Boy's DMs. Send a message. Send good luck. It really, really matters. So send a message to Stephen and send a message to all your pals that are out there doing something this weekend, because you never know the motivation that gives somebody. So there you go.
You're here. Moving on. We're heading over to the Sahara. John O'Donnell is mid-marathon disabilities as we speak, battering through the desert. It looks like he's having all sorts of fun.
Aye.
Out there. But he looks like he's getting on great guns.
He's doing all right, but you know what? If you've kept an eye on his prep and his training, man, he's put the graft in for what he's there. He's enjoying the experience of a lifetime.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that he sort of blames us a wee bit for the very fact that he's there. He listened to an episode with Mark Riley.
He did.
And that's what lit the fire for John to be taking on this experience. And he's doing himself very, very proud. And we're very proud of him too. So he's only got a couple of days to go, I think.
Yeah.
And that'll be him.
Sunday, yeah. Finishes. So, yeah. We'll hear all about it when he gets back. But in the meantime, follow his agent, Bobby Burt, for all the updates on Instagram.
Definitely. Flaming Bobby Burt. He's got his finger in some pies, that fella. Literally. Hey.
Absolutely legend of the community. Okay. Anything else? We've got a birthday shout out.
We do. We got a request. We didn't get loads of requests from people, but
we can facilitate some of them. Others, you need to go through our PayPal account.
But there's somebody, he's a listener to the podcast. We got a message from Mallory Warren informing us that James Jones, has got a big birthday coming up. The big 5-0 is going to be next week. And he's got a big year of running coming up as well.
He has the half. I think it gets underway next weekend at the Fling. So you'll get a chance to see him yourself, John. But weirdly, serendipity, I was running last Sunday morning for Auchinstarry, which is on the Forth Clyde Canal, just in Cumbernauld with pals. And there was a lad getting ready for his run at the same car park. And I kind of spotted a devil buff. And I thought, who that is, didn't get him. And he messaged on Strava later on to say, I thought it was you in the car park. That was Jim Jones.
Recognise your dulcet tones. Yeah. So
whispering to.
So Jim Jones, happy birthday, man. It's your birthday next week. Hope you have a great day. If I see you at the fling, come up and I'll give you a birthday sticker. There we go. We'll do that. Well, it'll be a Young Hearts Run Free sticker, but it'll be a birthday present to yourself.
Magic. So, good luck, Jim, with your 50th birthday celebrations and running for the rest of the 2024 season.
Yeah, and big shout out. Thank you to Mallory for giving us a heads up. Thank you very much for that, Mallory.
Oh.
Well, we go guest side.
We'll go guest. We have got other things that we want to speak about. But no, this week.
Aye. Because we've got a really, really exciting guest for people to listen into as well.
Keep all things positive this week.
Mm.
Some of the topics are not positive. There's maybe a wee hint. So, yeah, this week's guest, Kaz Williams, joining us from Chamonix. And, yeah, Kaz is somebody who we've known about for some time, about her exploits and also her non-running exploits as well. When I say that, it's all connected to running. And we're really excited to talk to her. And she doesn't let us down.
Not at all. Golden, we say this a lot, but there literally is golden nuggets aplenty in here. Favourite bit of kit, stunning, absolutely stunning. But Kaz's story, and I think just her take on life, is well worth a listen. I was totally inspired. I think at one point I was actually speechless in this episode. So I'm sure you folks will. And I hope you enjoy it as much as we did recording it. Kaz is a very, very special person, and I feel very privileged to have an hour and a bit in her company. So I hope you guys enjoy it as much as I did. Welcome to the Young Hearts Run Free podcast, Kaz Williams. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you, John, and great to meet you too, Stephen. I'm super excited to be on your podcast. I mean, I've got lots of friends that have already been on, and I'm excited to be here. So thank you so much.
I don't think you're as excited as we are, though, Cass. Okay. But what we always do, we like to give our guests an opportunity to tell a wee bit of their backstory. And for those people who maybe haven't heard about Cass Williams, tell us about what brought you into the world of running and to where you are now, both on the planet, but also with running as well. Who is Kaz Williams?
That is such a good question. And we could use job title, we could use family scenario, we could use where we were born. I think to say who is Kaz Williams is that I'm an optimist. And I like to see the positive things in the world. And I also have a big drive to push myself, to see what I'm capable of. And that's been both academically, physically, in training, in different roles. So that's a kind of, I suppose, umbrella view of me. But with regards to trail running, oh my goodness, I was not athletic as a kid, that is for sure. I was kind of like geeky size, like all these like amazing, gorgeous athletic girls. And I was kind of like a bit, you know, like I describe myself as like a dumper truck. I was very like robust, and so yeah, not good at sports, but I did do a little bit of running. My dad loved to play squash, so his training was running, so I used to be there on the doorstep with his stopwatch. And so I think there was something there that I thought, hey, running is pretty cool because my dad did it. And then I came to Chamonix to do a ski season. I'd done a little bit of running in the UK, so I'd done some 10Ks, half marathons, and started a little bit of trail running with a club in Shropshire. We moved to Chamonix, and I think it was our first full summer here that I'm standing at. There's a place called Gaillon. It's where the UTMB course comes out of Chamonix on the road, and it picks up the trail. And there's a bar there, and it's a very popular place to see the front, you know, to see the pack of runners leave Chamonix. And so I didn't know anything about this race. So it's this gorgeous August evening. It's hot. It's like 5:30 and the bar's pumping, and the bar staff have got trays of like mini beers like on them for the runners. And so I say to my buddy, I said, like, so tell me about this race. And they go, well, they're going to join the trail here. They're going to run around basically hang a left towards around the back of Mont Blanc into Italy, back of Mont Blanc into Switzerland. And I'm like looking at Mont Blanc at this time, knowing that Courmayeur is just through that tunnel and into Switzerland and back round. And I'm like, 100 miles and like 10,000 meters. I said, that's crazy. Saw the runners come through, and I get goosebumps thinking about it now, really. It was quite, you know, seeing the sharp end, the elite athletes come through. They were running it at like 10K pace, you know, it felt ridiculous. And they were heading into the night. I mean, it was good weather conditions that year. And then to see the mid-pack runners and the smiles and the energy and almost that nervousness of, you know, not knowing what to expect for a lot of people. But it was magical. So I went to bed that night and I was a bit like, they're still running. Everyone's still running. All those people that I've seen, maybe possibly 2,000 people. And so I got up the next morning. Like I said, I was doing some running, but maybe 10K max. And I went to that point. I went to Gaillon where the trail started. And I ran that river trail to Lesouches that some people may know. And there's a little kicker. I mean, it's a tiny kicker. It's like 20 meters in elevation gain. And I reached it and I'm like huffing and puffing and I'm like having to walk. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. It's like 20 meters of elevation gain. What are these runners doing? So I got to the Lesouches end, turned around, came back. And that was my, you know, I'm a researcher and I'm really curious about stuff. And that planted a seed. And the seed was, how do I get to run UTMB? So that started my trail running kind of journey. I was very respectful of the mountains. So I started with, you know, the kind of marathon to Mont Blanc, did a lot of the local races and 30Ks or 50K. And then over about 2 or 3 years, signed up for the CCC, did the CCC, and very lucky to get into the TDS the following year and then the UTMB the year after that.
All because somebody told you that they hang a left. There you go.
Hang a left round Mont Blanc. I know. You just kind of run round Mont Blanc. That's it. Yeah.
Wow.
John, that was zero AUTMB. That is quite a... I don't know if there's an app for that, like an NHS app, but like zero couch to UTMB, Kaz. Just for my benefit, and maybe listeners as well, when you say you moved to Chamonix for a ski season, that seemed to be quite a important move. What year was that? What are we talking in the timeline?
So that was 2009-10.
Okay, right. Well, so
yeah. And 15 years ago. Yeah, and my UTMB was 2014. It was, so the CCC was 2012, which is the year that, the really bad weather year that UTMB stayed in France, and there was all that craziness and chaos about how runners were hearing about what was happening to the race. So 2012, I did the CCC. I love the TDS the following year. I think out of the race series, that's my favorite. And then UTMB, I say was 2014. I say I completed these races. I possibly didn't have right to be on the course with my knowledge at that point. I was such a beginner, such a novice, not just in, you know, I'd done the mountain training, I'd got my body around, but things like nutrition, you know, my nutrition was shocking. I hadn't appreciated how much it would take from me. You know, learning about head torch. I had like a 50 buck head torch. And, you know, I've since learned that, you know, it's a bright, you know, the better you can see at night, the faster you can move. If you've got this little shining light and you're struggling over gnarly trails, then you're going to slow down. And there was lots of things that, you know, I had really bad foot issues. I think I had to spend like an hour in an aid station just getting my feet sorted. So I think my shoes were just my normal size. They weren't a size too big, you know, a half size bigger. So it was just like, I finished, but I was like, and I was very proud to finish. I still, you know, I still hold that really dear in my heart because it was the time where it was still quite, you know, it wasn't the scene that it is now. So 2014, it was still quite, you know, kind of, I don't think it's even hit 2,000 runners. I think it could have been like 1,500 or something like that. So, but oh boy, was it an experience.
Well, you know, it's quite an introduction that you've provided us there, Kaz. But what was your, you've spoken there about how you felt you were maybe not ready to be on that course, but you were, because having done the CCC, the TDS, it's equivalent to doing the Highland Fling, the Devil of the Highlands, and then doing the full West Highland Way, isn't it? That's just what you're, that's what it's like.
Yeah.
But was it the UTMB, I imagine it, to be magical? And I think you described in your introduction, when the first time that you'd experienced it from the sidelines, it was magical. Was it magical, your experience of running it?
It's easy to look back in hindsight and say, you know, it was all, you know, it was a fantastic experience. It was, but I think it was a fantastic experience because of all the highs, because of all the lows, because of it was probably the first time I did a bit of an assessment of where I sat within. I'm not talking about performance, but just how I was able to physically get my body and my mind around that course. When I would see you know, a guy on the side of the trail, and you know how beautiful our trail running community is, we'll care for each other. It's very different to some other sports. It's like, hey buddy, how you doing? Like, you know, what's wrong? You know, get, you know, tuck in behind me, let's do this climb together. It was just out of an aid station, and he was generally broken. Like, his race plan had, you know, the wheels had come off. He was like, my time's got, I'm like, you know, time's got everything. And I was like, hey, that if you quit now, tomorrow morning when you're in your hotel room, where he was from Ireland, and I went, and you've got to go back, you know, I honestly, trust me, you'll regret not just hiking out the next climb, get some food in you. And I saw him at the finish, and you know, I had the biggest hug, and he was like, I'm a UTMB finisher, I don't care about the time. I'm, you know, yes, I can come back and do it faster, yes, I can improve, yes, I can take all the lessons. But oh boy, it was just that moment. And there were probably a lot of people in that situation, because it's such a brutal, I mean, it's a brutal race, but there are lots of other challenging races out there. But I think because of it being UTMB, people attach a lot to it. People have to travel, expend a lot of money, get all the qualifiers. You know, it's not just a sign up and run. And sometimes that can put pressure on people, so.
Sounds like you're a bit of a trail angel as well, encouraging people, bringing that optimism.
We all are, aren't we? I think we all are.
Again, so we're battering away with lots of acronyms and stuff, CCCs, TDSs, yes. UTMBs. That's fine. I'm just for context, the CCC is what, just over 100K distance-wise, 6,000 odd metres of elevation gain. The TDS, 145K with 9,000, and the UTMB 175.
Yeah, it's just
that
little bit more now.
Yeah, and with 10,000, you know, so it's no mean feats that we're talking here. And yeah, I'm sure guys didn't just turn up in 2012 for the CCC, having not experienced. Well, John and I talk a lot about getting your foot on the route when, you know, we're training, and sometimes that's possible and it's easy logistics, and other times it's, you know, you need to go an effort. John's training just now for the Lakeland 100, Kaz, and you know, he's been back and down to the lakes quite a few times and investing his time and doing brilliantly. For you, based in Chamonix, you've got the route pretty much on your doorstep. Was that, you know, did you get to spend a good bit of time on the actual terrain?
I don't tend to recce courses, so when I did the UTMB, it was the first time around the UTMB, apart from the section that I'd done on the TDS, and but in reverse, and then also the CCC. But for my training, I kind of avoided it almost. I made sure I familiarised myself with probably the last section, from Valocine up, from the just coming up back from Switzerland into France, and knowing that descent. The descent into Chamonix, so that was familiar, but it's something I don't generally do. I don't generally get onto courses and recce them that well, because, and I try and this is where I suppose I try and share that with other athletes, in that what you need to know is, or try and get on, is gnarly terrain in your environment, or if you have to do a weekend away or somewhere, then the closest place to you where you can get a bit like what John's doing, closest place to you to be on similar terrain, and get a feel for what 1,000 meters feels like. Try and, you know, have a sense of what that's like in your legs, not just on the climb, as we know, but it's the descending as well, because at the end of those races, it's not really the climbing that's breaking us, it's the descending. You know, everything kind of starts aching, our knees are sore, you start you know, you're kind of like limping down a trail and a route that you'd normally dance over. You're a bit like, oh, the obstacle's this big, you know, and it's like, it can be painful. So the more I think we practice descending as well, as ultra runners, particularly if we're doing mountain races, so that's a really important part of, you know, the specificity of our training.
Brilliant. You've seen footage of me descending, haven't you?
Like you can pretty much. Dancing down the trail, Stephen, yes.
Yeah, right.
Can I ask, though, living in Chamonix and in that environment, does that help? This might be a silly question, but I'm committed. Does that help with your acclimatization to that environment, or do you still have to get up in the hills? Do you still have to go high? I know, acclimatization. Stephen's looking at me. I don't know where it came from, but here we go. But does just living there help?
Yes, it does. Yeah, it does. So I'm continuously at, so the valley of Chamonix is at 1,000 meters. I'm up at 1,300, so another 300 meters off the valley floor. You know, some people that live at sea level do. You know, I'm from Swansea in Wales originally, and so I know it's bizarre, isn't it? Because when I do go home, I stand there and I go, I live 1.3 kilometers in the sky compared to where I am right now in that kind of like when we consider geography. Mm-hmm. But it does help living at this altitude. Mm-hmm. I'm fortunate I don't suffer with altitude sickness. My biggest concern was when I went to Colorado, because Silverton and all that area, the San Juan Mountains, they're all sitting even higher than Chamonix. They're up at, you know, 2,000. I won't guess at the numbers because I'll get them wrong. But I only had like 4 days before I was due to race there. And the first thing I did was I got to a trail outside Silverton and I just power hiked up like 800 meters. I wanted to see what my body was going to do and how I was going to respond. And I was okay. I was lucky, I was okay. I do know a lot of people that then go to Hard Rock and suffer really bad altitude sickness if they can't acclimatise, give themselves enough time to get acclimatised.
Swansea, Chamonix, Silverton. This is a few. Where's your favourite place in the world to run?
Oh, I did have a think about this because I wondered if you'd ask. And if I said a place, I think I'd come off the podcast and I'd go like, oh, no, that's not what, you know, maybe I should have said this place or that was. So I'm going to sum it up in, and it's when I thought of it, it did suddenly make sense. I love big landscapes and I love that feeling of being small. And I think if I consider the races that I've chosen, and most of my races have been really organic, they've been through another runner telling me about a race. And I go, oh, I've not heard of that one. And then I look it up and, you know, I'll be curious. And then I might put that on the list. But I think when we, for me, when I'm feeling that, how small I am in those big environments, I know there's like a gratitude. But then you see the small things as well. You can have a different perspective on things. So we may talk about Volstate in a bit, but Ball State was this massive landscape of Tennessee. These roads kind of like extended like miles ahead of me. And that on this roadside, I'd see like a butterfly, you know. So in that kind of like rubber band of focusing on distance, there was this beauty and just, I don't know. And that's the same, I talk about Colorado. The race, it was UA 100 and it was, we had an electrical storm in the night. And we'd gone out of the tree line. There was one other runner that I could just see his head torch ahead of me. So we'd come out of the tree line, hit a snowfield because they'd had such a big year of snowfall. We hit the snowfield. You could just see these markers, your head torch. It'd been raining for about like 10 hours. And then the lightning started striking. And when you see that lightning and then you see the mountain profile lit up, it's like, the majesty of it, and I think then that scale and sheer beauty just made me feel, and I think you think big if you're small and you're in this big environment. I think it helps you think big as well. So I get a perspective when I'm in these big landscapes, and there's so many to explore. My goodness, there's so many to explore. So I think that's how I would answer that question.
That's a great answer. And I totally get it. I totally, yeah, that's not a place, it's more a feeling. as such. Is there anywhere that's still to be ticked off that bucket list?
Oh gosh, I mean, I would love to go down to South Africa. That would be, you know, beautiful to see there. I hear the Montana landscape. Iceland, wouldn't Iceland be cool to run in? I haven't been there. So yeah, I've done some travel, but not very much. But I think, yeah, there's too many other places to explore. Yeah, the Yukon, Yukon Valley. Oh my goodness.
What the one that when you were describing the, you know, that sort of big landscapes and mesmerizing scenery almost, I was thinking Patagonia in Argentina or Chile or something like that, you know, is that's up there for me. So
yeah,
I don't know. John, what about you?
Yeah, when Kaz was, you've got a fantastic way of painting a picture with words, Kaz. Really, thank you so much for that. When you were talking about feeling small, I remember the very first time I ever felt that was I ran the Leirigru race that goes from Braemar to Aviemore, and you're going through the Leirigru. And I can remember being halfway along there and looking up, and all I could see was like mountains either side of me, and I literally felt the size of an ant. And it was so, so special. So thank you so much for taking me back to there. But Stephen and I, we've discussed a number of times. I think the sort of Western States type area would be the sort of landscape that gets me. And there's so many, and you're right, there's so many places on the planet. Wherever I go, wherever I see and watch documentaries on TV, I always think, I wonder what it'd be like to run there. You know, yeah. So there's so many. The world's a playground, and it's up to us to enjoy it. Yeah. So, but thank you for that. Now, you mentioned Vol State. Let's do that. Should we talk about Vol State? Because we had a wee preamble before we came on, and you certainly lit a wee fire, I think, between both Stephen and I. Do you want to say, first of all, what Vol State is and what that race is, Kaz?
Okay, so Vol State, or the last annual Vol State, is another one of Lazareth Lakes, Gary Cantrell's races. And it, I mean, Lars just, you know, brings something special to each of his races. And it is, so get this, it's a 500K traverse of Tennessee, which is 314 miles. You start by having a ferry ride across the Mississippi. So the race doesn't start yet, but you cross the Mississippi and you land in Missouri. So you just, all runners come off the ferry onto the kind of deck, and Lars, I can't remember what the start time was, I think it was like 9 o'clock in the morning. He lit his cigarette, his classic cigarette, and the race starts. You get back on the ferry, you cross over the Mississippi again. You land in Kentucky, you do so many miles in Kentucky before you then cross back over into Tennessee. So Tennessee is like a rectangular kind of state, it's like that. And you kind of come from this corner here and we traverse down. So if it's like that, we traverse down and we pop out into Georgia. And the finish line is up Sand Mountain to a place called The Rock, which is just literally a rock. And that's the finish of the race. So in, like I said, in Lars's amazing style, he has two options when you sign up. It's either crewed or screwed. So crewed is obviously very obvious. You have crew, or you go for the screwed option, which you basically start on that ferry with what you're going to running, what you're taking on that race. You can buy things en route and you can go into stores, but you're basically from A to B on your own steam, totally solo.
And on road, tarmac.
It is road. It is road. I think in my head, I'd seen some pictures of a dirt trail, and I probably didn't realize that was just the last mile of the race. I had all the other
13 miles on road.
Yes, I had all the other statistics. I knew that, you know, the how much elevation gain and everything as I was plotting it out. But there are incredible runners that do that type of race. Their bodies can stand up to that terrain. I suffered badly on kind of day two. with my feet again. That was kind of just what happened. And then I had this ache because of the camber. You always had to stay facing the traffic. So you run basically on the hard shoulder. And sometimes you go into towns, and then sometimes you're quite in quite rural Tennessee, so it would be single track roads. But yeah, it's a road race, and it's unbelievable.
Wow.
And running on hard shoulders and that could be good preparation for other races that we might speak about a wee bit later on.
It seems the perfect race choice for a trail runner from Chamonix.
It's in July. Ball State takes place in July. What's the weather like in July in Tennessee?
It's hot and it's humid. It's it's really hot and really humid. And so for every race that I've kind of done, there's always been one thing that is perhaps kind of that's new to me, a new experience. So I haven't done much running in extreme heat. I mean, we can have some crazy weather in Chamonix. You know, sometimes UTMB or Marathon de Mont Blanc specifically could be like hit the 30s, and it you know, a lot of runners really struggle with that 32 degrees. Then other times we can have storms and it can be like brutal, you know, rain and thunder and everything, in particularly around UTMB, sadly. But I'd kind of never done extreme heat. So in a friend asked me to, there's a Badwater race called Badwater Salt and Sea, which is one of the Badwater series. And it's a team event. There's two of you that do it. You have to stay together. And she asked if I'd join her and do that race. So I did that in the April, thinking, okay, so that's hot, but it's desert heat. There's no humidity. So I get some exposure then. And then with Ball State lined up in the July, I was like, okay, so I can do heat okay. I mean, it wasn't brilliant, but I could do heat okay. How am I going to deal with the humidity? And there's only one checkpoint where Lars and Carl, and I think Jan was there as well, which is 20 miles. So you come off the ferry and you run 20 miles and they just check everything's work, because you have to log in at 7 o'clock in the morning and 7 o'clock at night onto a website that they've created. And you just tell them where you are on the course. So you say mile like 200 or whatever, and you can write a little note and it gets put up on the website. And so family members can, that's a way of tracking you, but it's twice a day. But that first 20 mile check-in, I was kind of looking around and some people were like as if they'd just stepped out of a shower. You know, they were absolutely drenched. And then others less so. And I was like, I'm not too bad, because that was a big thing, you know, managing electrolytes, hydration. You know, the minute you're thirsty, you're especially in that environment. So I'm not great at staying hydrated. It's one of my weaknesses. But I made that a priority and I was actually okay. I kind of dealt with the humidity. It was wacky, but it was okay.
It blows my mind. 500 kilometers. Absolutely blows my mind. I also wonder how Laz gets permission. You know what it's like with landowners, permission to run through around the state?
It's not so much landowners, it's the amount of authorities and multi-agencies involved, you know, between law enforcement and all the different, you know, states.
Because all different counties. Areas have all got their own marshals and different things and different rules and regulations. But if anybody can do it, it's going to be your man, isn't it? So
I just looked at the map, Kaz, of the route, just, and I was like, oh, it goes on and on and on right across, like, do you know, was it four states that it goes through? Or
so Missouri, Kentucky right at the beginning, then Tennessee, and then you finish in Georgia. So it is predominantly in Tennessee.
You've also
Alabama and on there.
Yeah, you've also done a wee loop of another one of Laz's laces, haven't you?
I have.
Have you got Barclay? How was your experience there?
Well, I don't want to keep using the word magical, but it was surreal. It was crazy, amazing, all wrapped up in something so special and unique. I mean, I feel very privileged to have been. I mean, what a year this year. I mean, I am aware how long I'm talking, but what a year this year. Oh my goodness. I mean, from every one of the finishers, you know, Jasmine, a fantastic, incredible. Jared's fourth. I mean, how is that possible with the gap that he'd had as well between his previous finishes? John and Greg and Eeyore, it was just so I tingle, I suppose, with pride knowing I had that experience. For me, that was 2018, and it went down in, so there's I can't remember the name of the website now, cloud something, but it went down as the year of the rain. And Lars sent the runners a message after the race, and it just said, it said something like, the mountains may have won, but they know we were there. And it's, you know, I mean, he's so poetic in his writing. I mean, it draws you in, and him doing his transcon at the moment. But it was the year that I think, so Gary Robbins was the only person to do the fun run, three loops, but he was outside the cutoff to continue on to loop four. So it was just a year that ended at, you know, Gary finishing basically at three loops. But it was amazing. It was a fantastic experience. And I got to meet, I ran with two legend veterans that I'd been reading about for so long. I got to meet Hiram and I got to meet Dwayne, and I spent time there. And even though you have to go to Barclay believing you're going to finish the five loops, that's, you go, I mean, that's another story about, you know, kind of self-belief and visualization. But if you go there thinking, well, I'll do a loop and see what happens, there's no chance of you doing fives. You go there with that. That was my plan anyway. My story was quite funny though. So I was nominated Human Sacrifice. Seriously, I was nominated Human Sacrifice.
Bib number one.
I was given bib number one. And I'm sitting there in the chair, like given, see, I have to give Lars Dr. Pepper and I think it was a pair of socks. So I gave him those and I see him looking and he just goes, so here's your number, Kaz, like this. And the gasps around me when I got number one, I was like, oh my goodness. So I could go on about the whole Barclay thing, but do you know what I did? So I was chatting to my crew and George, my friend, she went, so why do you think Lars gave you number one? It's not like you haven't run any races or anything like that. And I went, So you have to write an essay, and the essay title is Why I Want to Run the Barclay Marathons, and that's your application. My essay didn't mention a single thing about running. I thought I was trying to be smart. I thought I had to say how tough I was. I was this dragon from Wales. I was like brought up with strong, powerful women. Princess Leia was my hero, you know, and kind of like all this. And I know I'm going to be brought to my knees by the briars of Rapture, but I will get up, Lars. I will not fail. All this. He thought, I've got a right one here.
Brilliant.
And I was like, yeah, maybe I didn't tell him I'd run any races. So, yeah, I am. Yeah, that is. Yeah, it was a very special time for me. Very special experience.
Use the word tingle, right? And I want to tingle. I want to tingle a little bit about Jasmine Paris, because all the finishers, as you've explained and named them, quite phenomenal, each individually and collectively, to do what they've done this year. But Jasmine, for want of a better term, that people in Scotland will certainly know, she set the heather on fire with what she's achieved for me, for women specifically. She's been a great champion, but for every single runner and anybody that wants to achieve anything, she's done that. What's your thoughts on Jasmine this year, Kaz?
Oh, wasn't it? I mean, how we were glued to Twitter. You just wanted information. You just wanted that, you know, where was she? What was she doing? How was she managing, you know, the sleep deprivation, her nutrition, everything, the navigation? Because there are so many stories of, And not intentionally, but somebody I remember had put a book back in a bag after taking their page because it was dark. It was, I think this was a few years ago, turned around just 90 degrees and put the book back in the wrong place. I mean, can you imagine then? You're the next person trying to find that book. And so I met a guy, he'd lost all his pages because of the wild storms that came in. And you've got seven books and your packet just goes, you know, so there's, apart from her incredible ability to be very present, I think that's really important. Her her ability to endure relentlessly. But, you know, it was fantastic to watch. It really was. It was so gripping. It's just, and like you said, for women, I think when I was it Graham that actually said to me, I think you could see this glow to Lars that he'd seen a female finisher. You know, that and when he was there, this was going to happen. It was incredible. Incredible. What a year.
Special. And I noticed that Jasmine is starting the elite race at London this weekend. So,
yeah.
You know, that's just how much that achievement has really caught. Because even though it's been on the Netflix documentary and, you know, and us in the running world are well aware of it, it's still relatively niche, you know,
in
the scheme of things. So for her to get that accolade in limelight is testimony.
And we should say, Stephen, Jasmine came on and spoke to us roughly about this time last year.
She did.
Right? It shows you what can happen. Come on the Young Hearts Run Free podcast.
I keep applying.
I'll just leave it there. I'll just leave that there. Now, you spoke there, Kaz, about Jasmine's mental resilience. And it's one of the questions that I have for you, because I'm going to ask you to speak about metal, which is something very close to your heart. But within that, I'm going to add on another wee question as well, and that's about the mental side of running. And you mentioned about the things that you've done from UTMB to the 500K Vol State, the mental side of things is a massive thing. And I want you to speak about, not just for me, but for the people listening in, about how we can develop mental strength, resilience, call it what you will. But first of all, introduce us to metal and tell us how it came about and what it is, please.
Thank you. Thank you very much for giving me that opportunity. So, I founded Metal to help runners like us basically take on the challenges that we're curious about. I believe in chasing dreams, and it doesn't have to be, I mean, like I said, it could be a first ultra. It doesn't have to be these epic events that we've just been talking about. It can be like somebody moving from 5K road, 10K road and doing their first ultra. It could be someone doing their first 100 miler. I think it would be, I would say that metal for me is about tapping into people's spirit and tenacity and determination. I believe in discipline. You know, when we work with athletes, we can kind of apply the tough love as well. We want you to reach the best version of you. And I see athletes, I see the athlete in all of us. Everything that we do through our running, I'm using running, but you know, other sports as well, it transfers to our life. And then we have that confidence. We impact and influence work colleagues, or our kids see us training. You know, so for me, I think metal came about as an opportunity to people to go, hey, I'd really like to try this, or I'd really love to see what I'm capable of. We provide coaching plans. We support a mental game, because certainly with ultras, a lot of people, a lot of runners come to me and they're like, I've had a series of DNFs and I can't figure out. I've been training really hard. I've done this, and this. But I'm quitting. There's something happening and I just can't find that, you know, what it is. So the mental game is incredibly important. And I think it's having those honest conversations with our athletes, you know, and it's trying. My goal is always to step into the shoes of my athletes. You know, life is busy. It's like we all have so many demands placed on us. And I think if I can find a way to connect with our athletes to help bring them out, and I think I heard, is it Robin Sharma say, it's about singing our song, like what really lights our fire, where we feel we're our most authentic self. And if running delivers that and that ripples through our life, I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? So I work with athletes with coaching plans online, with their mental game, to build confidence. We all want to get fitter, faster, and have amazing races. And we know there's so many elements to that. And through metal, we try and bring all that together.
That sounds wonderful. It's as good a description I've had of an initiative as I think we've ever had, John, because there's you've no missed a gap there, Kaz. And it sounds to me like it's much more than just coaching. There's much more to that ecosystem, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, building mental fortitude and belief. Is that fair?
Yeah. My word. So this week, Chris Cosman, the race director of Badwater, who I met when I did Salt and Sea, when you get in his emails, it says Chief Adventure Officer. And I kind of love that. I thought, that's a great title. You know, he's the founder of his company, everything else. Oh, and this. So my coaching philosophy, my life philosophy is belief. So people that know me will know that I create these little stickers every year. I started in 2019 when I was asked to do a talk, and the event organizer said, "Hey, have you got a business card?" And I didn't have anything at the time, and I could have just gone and got business card printed. Instead, I just printed a little sticker that had believe written on it. Didn't have my name or anything. It went in the delegate packs, and that's it. So that was 2019. And I decided that so many people really connected with it. It ended up on water bottles, it ended up on race numbers, on phones. I was getting images sent to me. I've got my believe sticker on my mirror. I see it every so every year since. I design a new little sticker. So believe. So I was doing believe way before Ted Lasso came out with his believe sign. But that, oh my goodness, that made me smile so much, because I'm not saying to athletes, hey, you just got to believe and you're going to run 100 miles. I mean, that doesn't happen. But I think what believe does is it builds our confidence. And so many people lack confidence and they work so hard, and it's just this something that I really want to elevate them. So believe being my word. And when I saw Chris Cosman's Chief Adventure Officer, I felt so proud of myself this week. I am now the Chief Believe Officer of Metal. That is my CBO. I am the CBO of Metal. And if I can spread that belief, that is my goal. And if I touch one person through your podcast, if I get somebody to say, hey, I'm going to be bold and I'm going to look at this year and I'm going to train for a 50K, or I'm going to do my first, you know, trail race even, I'm super happy at that.
I've no doubt that somebody will be listening to that last couple of minutes when they're out on a trail run or just a road run and they're really struggling, and you're talking about belief and about stickers and about that optimism, that there will get somebody through a run. So thank you very much for doing that, Kaz. I want a belief sticker. I love
you
a sticker.
You can have one. They're going to be coming out in, they should, the next one has been, so I've done the draft. I've done the draft and it's being mocked up now. So I'm on like version 2. It needs a bit of tweaking, but they should be out in May. So, yeah.
We'll swap your stickers.
Yeah.
That would be really cool. I'd love some of yours.
Definitely.
And you mentioned there as well that you were going speaking at, I'm not sure if it was a conference or whatever it was that was happening. That's another hat that you wear as well, as Chief Believe Officer. Do you want to say a bit about where you go and speak?
I've been trying to, wherever I race, is trying to give back to the community. And if I can do that by sharing a couple of mental tools or a pre-race. So if many athletes perhaps don't have coaches. So if I've started doing pre-race, race strategy kits, talking about, you know, the when you want to have a pee, what do you do? You know, some of these things like are really new. Do you put safety pins for your number or do you wear a race belt number? You know, how do you manage? How do you pack your, say it's your first 100 miler, how do you pack your vest efficiently? So I try and bring in, speak to running groups. And maybe contact race directors before their race. A lot of the stuff I do online. So I've got some, I've even spoke to, do you know what's really fascinating as well? It's when a friend had moved over to Laguna Niguel in California, so in Southern California, and he joined a Rotary group. And he said, hey, I know you're in the area. I don't suppose you can come and give like a talk to our lunch. We like, you know, we'd be great to have you over. And this talk was meant to be like a 30-minute talk. An hour and a half later, out of this group of businessmen, we find out that one's a collegiate rower, one has run Boston, you know, 10 times or something. And so how sport brought business together and leadership skills and qualities of, I mean, I mentioned discipline. I think that comes through, I've said it, every aspect of our life. And if leaders are looking for a new, you know, bringing new people into their team, our discussion went from, you know, like I said, Boston to rowing to job interviews. How do you interview somebody to find out, you know, what their skill set, their characteristics are? It comes when it's a difficult situation. We know what we go through in the pain cave when we're running and how we navigate that suffering. So those are some of the spaces that I've been talking, but it's about service and it's about giving back to this amazing community.
Sorry, I'm not often speechless, am I? But
John's wondering what your diary's like. That's what he's thinking. when you next in Perth?
I'm honestly loving this.
I can make it to Perth whenever you want, John.
Oof, right, the door is open. We'll wait until you've got your
concert hall booked, John.
We'll wait until you've got your stickers ready, and then we'll get you across. The coaching side of things, though, the world's changed because of the pandemic and the internet and the availability of things. I'm not asking you to name people, but have you got clients? Is it a global thing you're working with? And is there availability? How do people get in touch with you?
Oh, John, you're so kind for asking. I'm pretty rubbish at pitching the company, but you just, yeah, thank you so much. I'm very grateful. I do work with athletes all over the world. I work at the moment, I've got athletes in Malta to New Zealand to quite a lot in America. I have some beautiful athletes in Scotland as well. So it is global, and it's my youngest athlete is 18, just turned 18. And I am working with an incredible lady who just finished, we give her a bit of a cheer, the Desert Rats by UTMB in Colorado. She's 70 years young, and she did 100K in just under 19 hours. So, and she came she won her age group because she said, you won't believe this. The next youngest person to me is 62. I mean, you know, where's my competition? So that's it. But she, out of 38 women, I think she came 21st. So
brilliant.
So that's, and she, and you know, every athlete has a story, a beautiful story, and their journeys. And I get, you know, I'm privileged to share that with them. I have, you know, an athlete racing a road marathon this weekend. Others that are on personal challenges as well. I think that's what's beautiful about our about running, just saying generally. You know, we're learning a lot, I think, in ultra running from sort of, I don't know, if let's even take track and, you know, some of the form, and things are changing in the ultra scene now. It's very much, you know, we don't just go out, we need to learn what good form is. We understand too many people are running with injuries or niggles, and you know, that's not good, but they don't stop and perhaps question it. Whereas we know there could be this beautiful transition of everything that we've learned from road running and the marathon runners to our forms. Sometimes you see some ultra runners and, you know, right arms are coming round as if it's in a rugby tackle, and you know, you could just a few tweaks. So I think we can learn a lot from the other running space and bring that into our running as ultra runners, trail runners, sorry, and ultra runners.
I've got a quick side question. It was just something that you said there, and it was around about, like, yeah, you coach people into the psychology of it, the actual, you know, building endurance and resilience. But I've been coached before and I really enjoyed it, but there's almost a default bit of life coaching going on in there as well that is almost unwritten in the sort of contract. Is that fair to say that it almost just happens organically? and that coach athlete relationship that builds and you foster throughout your time with an athlete can be really quite magical and special in itself.
Absolutely. If I didn't spend the time to invest in my athletes about their life and what maybe challenges they had, what, you know, pressures that they had in their life, you know, how am I going to bring the best athlete out of them? And I think that takes time as well. You know, sometimes I might have an athlete saying, hey, I've got a race in 3 months, can you train me for it? And that's a different relationship. And I can say, yes, we can produce a plan for that. We can get you. I would need to do a bigger dive into, like, where are you at with your run? You know, a bit more case history. But I think and that's what's beautiful, you know, ultra run. If somebody's starting with, say, a marathon now and wants to do and has got that dream of doing a 100-mile race in 2 years, let's think about that 2 years. Let's, you know, plan the races in between. How are you going to fit in the training? What hours can you commit? And then we can build from there. But you're right, it's very much, it's the connection with the person and trust. You know, there has to be two-way with the trust as well.
Right, thank you, Kaz.
I did ask, but I'm going to answer the question. There is we will put a link to the Metal website, but Metal's on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, you can find them there. There is a contact link that you can send. There's multiple ways to get in touch with Metal.
Exactly. We'll stick all these links up on the show notes and on our and also Kaz is on Instagram as well, Mountain Kaz.
Yeah.
Surprisingly enough for running flat road 314 mile paramount.
Talking about great segue. We love a segue, Steve.
Oh, we do, we love a segue.
Talking about training, Kaz. What's the training week look like for you just now? What's it like just now?
So this year's been a little bit different in that, so I was having a chat with a friend last night who's my crew for my race in the summer. And she goes, so how's your training going? It's a great question. Get my train. Well, if I described it in months, I would say January I cried and then February I took action. So January, I had a niggle from coming out of Ball State. It's a little niggle on the side of my calf that I've had for years and I can manage it. But I was getting to the point where I wasn't feeling confident enough in then building the volume and the intensity. So after on the 3rd of February, I found out that I got into Badwater 135. Ooh. And it's so exciting. I know.
How did you find out that you got into Badwater 135?
Okay, so Badwater is a really rigorous application process. Mm-hmm. You have to share all your running history. He has certain criteria. So it's not like every race under the sun, but over a certain distance, you know, over 100 miles. He doesn't include multi-day races. So you have to put all this information in. Then there's questions in 50 words or less. Tell us about, you know, why you want to be in bad, you know, and then in 25 words or less, tell us what running means to you or what life means to you. And it's amazing to explore that, to do the internal work, to go, well, what does it mean to me, you know? And a lot of my races have been quite organic. And when I look back, I was going, heck, that heat work and humidity that I did last year, just by my friend saying, would you come and be a team buddy? I wouldn't have thought of doing that, but it's kind of set me on this journey. And when a friend said, hey, you need to consider doing the 135, and I brought it all together, put the application form in. And then on the 3rd of February, Chris Cosman does a live announcement on Facebook. Live announcement. So it's a bit like the excitement of Western States. So we're sitting there, it was I think 9 o'clock in California, sort of 6 o'clock here in France, and he starts calling out the names, and he does it in such a great way. So he doesn't say the sex, but he just says, and this runner is from Argentina, they've done Badwater once before, welcome to Badwater 135, Joe Smith, like that. So he does it, this kind of build up, and I didn't appreciate at the time that only 100 runners get chosen. I think he's gone for 103 because he said there's always a couple that, you know, can't make it. And that at about 40 or 50 names in, like, I was looking at John, my partner, I was like, oh, you know, maybe it's not going to happen. And then it was, so this person is from the UK, She currently lives in Chamonix, France. Kaz Williams, welcome to Badwater 135. Oh my goodness. It was very special. So you get invited and you hear, and then the planning and preparation starts. It's quite something. I mean, you've spoken to Debbie and her Badwater experience. I mean, my goodness, it's going to be one heck of a journey.
And that's the end of July.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, end of July.
I must like it in July in America. So there you go.
Yeah, well, let's see what happens, hey, with the temperatures. I mean, I was, I think I saw in one of Debbie's from social, with it at the time she was there, like 118 to 120 degrees, and I'm like, oh my goodness.
She had that temperature thermometer rigged up.
Marco at the back pumping up.
he had a hairdryer right on the sensor just for effect.
I love Marco and Debbie. They're just amazing. They're so cool.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful. One of my favourite photographs, we've got a photograph of Debbie standing at the Badwater sign with a Young Hearts Run Free mug. Honestly, it's a fantastic photograph. Aww. Yeah. So, So best of luck.
You were asking me about training. That's right. You were asking me about training. I sidetracked.
That was a question.
That was kind of my fault.
But now, so now it's, I do have a mountain race later in the summer as well. So I'm really combining, trying to build my vert, and then a lot more running, like when you just got to run, or you're doing a marathon, that's going to be, so that's how training shaping up, and a lot of strength work. I've made that a priority. So I do about, I'm running, coming out of a Chamonix winter, I'm running 5-6 times a week, and building the intensity now, and also 3-4 strength sessions a week. Strength and mobility, kind of break that up.
Okay.
John will want to interrogate you about your strength training. Because John's absolutely disciplined strength trainer. He does wall sits for hours. He's got the world record.
Guinness World Record.
He's got the world record wall sits.
I found that.
His whole body's trembling and I'm like,
Oh man.
You can demo it when you're over at the stage show.
A wall sit for your whole presentation. Oh, didn't stop saying things like that. I give myself an awful trouble.
Oh, man. You hate it. Taps off.
Now, listen. We're talking about, we have spoken about mental strength and resilience. And part of what I've been playing with in recent episodes is asking somebody who knows our guest to pose a wee question. So.
He does this.
I got in touch with Mr. Graham Conley, okay? And I asked Graham, I says, what sort of question would you ask Kaz Williams? And what he's, I'm going to have to read this because he's...
Oh, my goodness.
Right? I'm going to have to read this and there will be a question at the end. He says, that's an easy one. When we did the Scottish National Trail, Kaz and John, Graham's brother, John Conley, went down to Reckia River Crossing. Kaz smashed her knee. She's like... And in Graham's words, like, really fucking bad. And he said, she went on to do all of her sections over the next 4 days. This was before she even started running. This was in a thing called Pylon Endeavour. This was the Scottish National Trail. She got it checked afterwards, and it was all kinds of fucked. I've never seen toughness, determination, and stoicism like it. That was the day I realised that Kaz is just built differently. The second leg that she had was horrendous as well. There was a brief chat of pulling it at one point. It got so bad. So for 4 days, Kaz barely mentioned it. So tell us about how you got through that period, Kaz. If you can remember, maybe it was a while ago, but do you recall what Graham's mentioned?
I do. And I know it so well because the winter leggings that I still wear has this tiny hole in the knee where I fell. And what I found out later through a physio and an x-ray, I fell onto a rock on my kneecap. I pushed my kneecap out of position and I deactivated my VMO. So So I basically made a bit of a mess of my knee. I have a lovely neat little scar and it was bleeding so much. I think I had to ask somebody to just, I needed like proper stitches effectively. So we're putting on as much like Band-Aid and everything as we could. But I did that before we'd even started. John and I had started our leg. And I was like, there's no way you can let your buddy down. So to start with, it was just team. Everything was about team. It was about getting this done. John, bless him, he was so John Connolly, bless him, he had my back just to keep me together, because I came off the recce section and I was white as a sheet and I think I was close to vomiting and everything else, was the pain was so much. And we saw Paul and Graham coming up and they're handing over to us and they're looking at us a bit suspicious, like, hey, where's all the whooping and the like? And we're just going, okay, we're just going to carry on now. And I'm like, oh. Like, we just got to keep going. But I think we got into that river crossing and there's still a little bit of footage of that river crossing. It was freaking amazing. You felt alive going through that water. I think John thought was going to be carried off into the and never seen again. But because then I spent a couple of nights running with Graham as well. And yeah, everyone had my back with that. But I'm very good at hiding stuff as well, particularly when it's a team situation. One leg when I did it on my own, I think I cried the entire leg. I had to get out this emotional kind of like, so I'm running through this beautiful scenery, checking the kind of GPS that I was on track going, it's okay. You're like day three now, we're going to do this. You know, so a bit of an internal pep talk, but fundamentally I have some weird things that I kind of tap into that if I know other people have experienced worse than me, what am I going to do? Am I going to give up? So one scenario that, and it's a visual one that's always stuck with me. I read the Joe Simpson book, Touching the Void, like 15 years ago. And the way that he describes falling through snow bridges, into crevasses, crawling through, like having been in the pit of a crevasse, trying to find a way out, 3 days of like over moraines and without food and a broken freaking leg. You know, and I'm moaning about a knock on my knee. So I kind of try and bring an element of what's the classic phrase? It could be worse. That's a big one that I certainly lean on. It could be worse. So when I'm in that electrical storm in Urey, it was like, okay, it could be snowing. It's just raining. It could be colder. You could be, you know, so there's always a could be, it could be worse. And I kind of lean on that. And I think that's what got me through, plus big hugs and mugs of tea and cake, and Ali brought the best and the first vegan burrito to our crew. So yeah, it's a fantastic event.
A good lesson for us all to think about how you can turn things around in your head. It doesn't just happen though. It doesn't just happen. Well, maybe it does for you, Cas, but I left two sentences off at the end of that, and Graham says, she's fucking nails, that Kaz. He says, I would have chinned it off and started bevying. So, you know, great kudos from Graham Conley. Thank you to Graham for providing that wee story. Then you've responded to it. So thank you very much, Kaz. Thank you for that insight.
I owe that dude a big hug. Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah.
Everybody's owe Graham Conley a big hug. A big tight one. He's a lovely guy.
Right. I want to back on to our questions. Yes. Our official questions for Kaz, rather than sort of side flanking you with some joker's questions. And I say joker in the actual real sense of the word. You said that you'd done it, sometimes when you're doing your talks, you speak about kit. What is your favorite bit of running kit that is indispensable, or the best bit of kit you've ever owned? It could be a couple.
Okay, so I'm quite loyal to brands, not the brand itself, but if something works for me, I don't need to play around with it. So I might have a pack for quite some time. I use Nathan packs. I love the Innovate running pants, the stretch and the material, the waterproof. With regards to poles, I've only ever used the Black Diamond Carbon Z poles. But, and I was thinking that when we're in particular, let's say mountain races, particularly in mountain races, and if I know that conditions could be varied and there's good chance of storms, a real hack is, you know, the surgical gloves, you know, the ones that tattoo artists use now, mechanics use them, decorators. Though, so I've spent years trying to find a really good pair of waterproof gloves, and I don't think they exist. And if they do, they try and then make them warm at the same time. So then if they get wet, they're kind of like these kind of things hanging off your hands. So the water, these, and they're pence, aren't they? So these surgical gloves, super strong. And I put them over then a warmer pair of gloves. They're teeny tiny, so they go great in your pack. And if you've got two or three or four of them, they take no space. So if one does snag, and the very first time I wore them, and the only color I could find was like bright blue, was on Barclay. So I'm like, everything else, I've got these bright blue gloves. It was just, I mean, it was hilarious. Bright blue surgical gloves running around frozen Head State Park. And I've used them ever since and share them with people. And every now and then a runner will send me a picture of all her kit or his or her kit laid out with the surgical gloves over their gloves ready. So that's a quick hack.
It's simple though. It's
Isn't
but
it?
It's genius. It's the gloves that have kind of got almost a talky powder sort of quality to them, when you're putting them on. And you sometimes see robbers wearing them when they're robbing houses.
Exactly. I'm not a robber, but
no. But if you're walking around Barclay looking for books, you know, you could be deemed to be suspicious of her. Yeah. So, because I thought at first you put them on first next to your skin and then, you know, other gloves on top of it, but it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Brilliant. That's a game great changer. Hack.
That's a
fantastic.
Good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. All your seal skins and everything. You're not getting tagged on this post. Not a chance. Brilliant. I love it. I don't know. Can you get them branded Mountain Kaz officials?
You know, maybe I should. That would
be. Get a wee, I believe.
Like, maybe just get metal printed on the knuckles.
Yeah, like love and hate metal.
Yeah, and then believe sticker.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Maybe you're onto something there. We'll maybe talk about that offline.
We'll cut this bit out, Stephen.
I've got big pals in the surgical glove supply chain. Oh man, thank you for that very, very interesting answer. And just knocking on from that, we always like to find out about people's favourite race nutrition fueling strategies, whether it's the normal or the unusual. The more unusual sometimes the better. But Kaz, what works for you?
So I'm plant-based. I'll always keep like a gel or a shot block in my pack. But for me, it's real food. And my go-to is peanut butter and jam, little tiny bites. I'll make them super small. And what else? So a lot of aid stations will have maybe bananas and bread. And I always just like smash a banana into the bread. That's my go-to. So if I have crew, I'll probably have some pizza slices and roti, like potatoes. The big thing that came out that got me so excited at Vol State was I knew food was going to be challenging being plant-based in Tennessee. So I kind of had a little bit of it. I made a little card with a list of foods when I was in total space cadet mode that I could go into a gas station and just say, do you have any of these? And it was like hummus and, you know, apple puree or whatever it was. But on one counter, I saw some potato wedges and I was like, potato wedges, can I just have a burger bun, like just the bun? And so hence the potato chip sandwich came together. And that was that's what I lived off at Ball State.
Chip
and
butty.
And again, chip kindred, butty, exactly. Genius.
Kindred spirits, man.
Do you love chip butties as well?
You can put it on, you can put it on a roll. If it goes on a roll, you're my pal. There you are.
Chip butty.
Chip butty.
Oh yeah, definitely. Fantastical. Yeah.
Well, do you know, I think it was a bit like going back to, if I've got a scenario that I think somebody survived through. And I heard a podcast about a guy who spent a year eating potatoes. You might have heard of this dude.
He
spent a year eating potatoes. I mean, the Irish did it in the 1800s, so it's not as if it's new. But I was like, if the only thing I can eat is a chip butty for the next, you know, 6 days, then that's what I'm going to do. And so that was golden. So those are real food for me. I'm very fortunate. I've never had problems, eating and running. And I suppose a tip I share with athletes as well, this isn't I'm not a nutritionist, but I think people forget to chew their food. I think that's a big cause as well. So if you eat too quickly and then you struggle, you have like tummy issues, it really slow down your eating and chew it a lot so that your mouth can do the work before it gets to your tummy. And then the other side is if you're really struggling with food issues and you can't get anything down, you know, like when you've been ill for 24 hours and you have that first piece of toast and you're like this going, I can't eat it, but I'll try, like this, and you have a little nibble. It's like if you're really struggling to eat, try and do the same, just nibble something, because that 10 calories will become 20 and 30 and you'll slowly build up. So both sides of maybe nutritional issues, like if you chew a little bit more, use your saliva, do the work in your mouth before the stomach, that would be a tip I would recommend.
Brilliant. I listened to a podcast recently and they were talking about one is better than zero. Doing something is better than doing nothing. And I think that just, it fits to me what you're saying there about having something to eat. So start small. If you're struggling, start small and build up on it. Yeah. Brilliant. I'm also rethinking now about my fuel strategy for the Highland Fling. It could be cold chip rolls. That could be it. There we go.
Oh. Butter rolls.
The problem I would have is getting them to my drop bags before I eat them. Brilliant. Thank you very much, Kaz. Honestly, this is one that I will go back and listen to a number of times because there's been so much good stuff in here. Brilliant.
Definitely. We were on a podcast the other day.
Yay.
As guests.
Yeah. I know. And it was a first. And they asked us that question if we go back and listen to our own podcasts. And I think John and I both agreed that we do, because you often miss out a lot of the nuggets and because you're busy trying to interact and concentrate and stuff like that, and it sometimes floats by you. So we don't go on just because we like the sound of our own voice, honest. Go on because we like to hear it, like beds it all in again. So it's been awesome. It's been really, really good. We do have a couple of final questions, and they're probably the most important questions of the episode, John, would you say?
Definitely. It's always the highlight for me, Stevie Bye.
It is. And the first one is entry into the Young Hearts Run Free Dialect Dictionary, which is a smorgasbord of terms and phrases from the UK and beyond. Now, you've lit on that you're a Swansea girl to heart, and you've been in Chamonix. You've also been to some fantastic places in the globe. What is Kaz putting into our dialect dictionary?
Oh, because you said it's like one thing, and I was like, I could ask them if it's like, would they like A or would they like B? I could make it a quiz. I could ask them. But I think to follow on the theme, I'm Welsh, living in Chamonix, traveled to the US, I've been in the military. I probably do something a disservice. So I decided to say I'm going to do a little bit of a pivot and say I was going to come from the Mental Toughness Dictionary. So I was going to give you a phrase that needs high energy, needs people to really commit to it. And it's really simple, especially if you don't have crew and you're running solo. And it's the power of the self high five. So when you feel like that. So self high five would be my word to add to your dictionary. Because I try and do this when I leave an aid station. So if I haven't managed to interact with anyone, I've been on my own a long time, you might be feeling a bit low. Regardless of the distance, terrain, everything, when we set our, like I said, you need to believe that you're going to reach the finish when you're doing all your training and pre-race mental strategies. But when you're in the race, you focus on the next marker, the next aid station, the next thing, which you do. And when you get to them, you celebrate them. And if you've got nobody to celebrate with, you actually have to celebrate with yourself. And that's really important. It sends positive.
Look positive at the smile vibes. On his face, Kat. Look at him.
It makes us feel good. And in that small, silly moment when you're self-high-fiving, it's like, hey, I'm doing this. I can do this. And that's what you're reinforcing. I kind of didn't really answer your question, but
Oh, you did. And yeah, brilliant. We haven't said this George to you, Kaz. Be,
how can you self high five with a chip butty in your hand? Put it in your mouth.
Yeah. I'm actually gonna. I'm not gonna do this, but I'm thinking when you were speaking there, Kaz. I'm thinking I'm going to actually avoid people so I can high five myself, right? But that defeats the purpose. So yeah. I will do that. But I think. We tagged this season, we've not mentioned this to you, but we tagged this season as being unpredictable. You've just went unpredictable, so thank you very much. Brilliant. Love that. One final question. I don't know what you're going to do with this one. One final question is about adding a song into our Young Hearts Run Free playlist. We've got a playlist. Sometimes people get a wee bit fed up or they want to change. It's like a palette change for your lugs, for your ears. They want to listen to some music rather than listen to us. So what song would Kaz Williams like to add into the Young Hearts Run Free playlist?
Well, with this one, I think I'm probably then going to disappoint you. Now you big me up that being unpredictable. I'm now going to do the opposite because I had a... There's so many good songs, aren't there, hey? And I'm quite selective at adding new ones to my playlist, my run list. And so I did have one option, but I'm gonna like shell that and go for the obvious, which is Don't Stop Believing by Journey. You may already have that on there, but it was I had to look when it came out. It was 1981 when it first came out, and I saw it on a reel last week by the actress Juliette Lewis, the one that's been in like gazillion films. And she had it on in her car and she said, hey, this track never gets old. And I had to replay it. And I was like, it's just got great energy. It reminds us to believe. It's a great story. And yeah, it fits with my coaching philosophy. So keep believing.
Brilliant. Can we trouble you for the other one you're toying with?
Oh, so this one's quite fascinating because it's quite... it challenges us to stand up. It's called My Favorite Mutiny by The Coop. Now the history behind it, it is absolutely a great track. So if your listeners, search for it on Spotify, it was the theme tune, I think in the 1980s to a HBO sports drama about the LA Lakers, the basketball team. Uh-huh. And even watching the video on YouTube, it's like this rubber band moment back to a time that was very different in sport. You know, all the cheerleaders, and I suppose there was a lot of money involved. And, certainly in kind of the players' level of performance and money and everything else. So it was shared to me by an athlete, and it's just, it's quite powerful.
Brilliant. Well, our listeners won't have to search for it on Spotify because it's getting added to the playlist, Cass. So it's going to be there. So thank you very much. Two brilliant tunes. And on the Don't Stop Believing, I used to DJ bits and pieces, and my daughter, Megan, somehow got me roped into DJing school discos, right? And it was around about the time, there used to be a TV show, an American TV show called Glee, about this people singing. And that was the theme tune, I think, to the show. And so I was, the only request I got from my daughter that I had to play at some point during the night was Journey, Don't Stop Believing. Now, it was this group of, well, it was a secondary school, so it's kids from, I don't know, what are they, 11 to 18. Place went mental. Everybody's singing it along and the power of that song. So although it was recorded in 1981, it's still very, very relevant today and it's a powerful message, isn't it? So thank you so much for choosing that. Kaz Williams, Thank you so much. You know, Graham Conley approached us in the North Inch a few weeks ago at the gathering of awesomeness. And he said, Steve, you're talking about awesome. You've got to speak to Kaz Williams. So he was right. Honestly.
Aww. He's a superstar, isn't he?
He is. He's a fantastic guy. But I'm so happy that we had that chat and he suggested that we approach you to come on as a guest. It's been a fantastic conversation. So thank you so much. And I wish you well. And Badwater, that's really exciting. And you know what? We've only touched the tip of your race experiences. So we're going to leave our Young Hearts Run Free caravan door open for a return visit. But I'm going to hand over to Stephen now to say a few words.
Yeah,
Stephen.
John, he's been on fantastic. He's an absolute wordsmith tonight. He's honestly, I think he's been on a course or something, Kaz, because he's not always this eloquent. But congratulations, John. That's been an impressive performance. But none that you've no upstaged our main guest. Kaz, thank you so much. That's been a joy to speak to you for the last, I don't know even how long, an hour and 20 minutes probably. But that's how we know the episode has been so good and it'll be so well received. You spoke about at the start about you're being an optimist. I think it's come across loud and clear. And I think somewhat it'll probably already rubbed off in John and I, and I'm sure it'll rub off on our listeners. So thank you so much and good luck in the Badwater Basin in July. We'll be watching.
Stephen, thank you so much. John, thank you so much. It has been a pleasure. I'm really grateful for you having me on your podcast. Thank you.
Just a small town girl living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going anywhere. Just a city boy born and raised in South Detroit. He took the midnight train going a singer in a smoky room, the smell of wine and cheap perfume.